Nightingale. Welcome to the Piper Podcast, where I talk to successful founders about how they built their businesses and turned them into brand legends. How did they start? How have they navigated their way? Where do they want to end up? And where are they on the 71770 journey, be that the number of employees, sites, turnover, whatever. 71770 are the key inflection points which Piper believes signal the need for step change along the way. And talking of journeys, with me today are Rosella and Hugh Bogier, founders of the luxury villa brand The Thinking Traveller, whose mission is to help clients discover places with soul alongside a service that is always thoughtful. Welcome.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, how nice to meet you. So you're 21 years in now. Where are you on that trajectory, the 71770 scale?
I think we're somewhere between 17 and 70,
okay.
I would say.
And how are you defining that? Is that numbers of employees? Or?
Well, it's a hard one, actually. I think it's certainly not years, although we have passed 17 years, but we don't know where it's going to be in 70. in terms of numbers of employees and turnover, yes, those numbers, grosso modo, sort of coincide. I think 17 for us was probably just before COVID. That was our big inflection point.
I'm thinking about numbers of villas in your case. How many villas do you have on your books?
About 300 at the moment.
Okay, so you're well through 70 and beyond. Mm-hmm. So talk me through that journey then, how the numbers have changed and when exactly your key inflection points were. Because you talked about before COVID and that was when you came through that. But where did you? How did the journey go before that?
I think it actually coincides with the years, because it was after 7 years that we decided to go to Puglia. So we started in Sicily in 2000, and Sicily was... because I'm from there, but because mostly Hugh had fallen in love with it as well. And we had focused entirely on Sicily for the first 7 years. And then he was a client who'd been traveling with us for probably already 4 or 5 years every summer. He said, this year, I would love to go to Puglia. And many other clients had said, we love traveling with you. Why don't you go somewhere else? We would like to experience your service in other destinations. And so we started in Puglia after 7 years. And that made me very, very nervous, because I do like having things under control. And that was a region that we didn't know as well. But we found amazing villas. And that's where I think that was the seven, I would say, definitely.
Let's go back to the very, very beginning and explain what The Thinking Traveller is and how the idea came about. And I did notice that you raised your eyebrows and glanced at each other when I described you as a luxury villa brand. Are you not a luxury villa brand?
Well, luxury is not a word that I particularly like, because it applies, I suppose, to shops with small things on large shelves. we're not really... that everyone needs to go on holiday, don't they? Everyone needs to relax, and we take the risk out of people's relaxation time. People work very hard all year. They have a week or two to spend in a villa, and we provide a great place for them to stay, some fantastic service, some great experiences to wrap around that, and generally the feeling that they're being looked after.
But the starting point is that we are the key holder of a family of luxury villas, and not all of them would get the five-star luxury from your employees that raise the hotel in a way, but they all charming, special, unique. They have something, they have a soul, and this is why we choose them, we and the team that works with us. So we're quite lucky in that, because of our reputation in the destination where we operate, properties get offered to us and we can assess whether actually they would be the perfect places for our clients. But we do need places with soul that really enable us then through our service to ensure that people can have a memorable time and remember, you know, something really special.
So not necessarily glossy or...
Exactly.
I'm thinking of a kind of, it sounds very derogatory, but like a kind of premiership footballer type house.
That's usually not what they're not. Okay. No, they're charming, and some of them are still quite rustic in small towns in Greece or Sicily. Don't have a pool, but they have amazing terraces and amazing views. But there's something special. So the quality is very, very high. The attention to detail is impeccable, but it's not the luxury in terms of the big television in every bedroom. No.
No. Okay.
Yeah, I think the luxury means different things to every person. Luxury could be location. It could be, you know, being able to walk out of your gate into the sand and have a swim in the morning with nobody around. It might be being in the middle of a forest with nobody to disturb you. And then again, it might be your bling house with a beautiful infinity pool and a
Priscilla's shaking her head.
And a powerboat moored. Well, we have plenty of those, but they're very nice.
But you describe, I mean, the name itself is obviously deliberate. The thinking traveller. Mm. What does that mean exactly?
It's a historical name for us. So, and it goes back, I suppose, to our origins. We actually started the business when we were based in Paris. And that was in 2000. We first started thinking about that. So Rossella's from Palermo. We got married in 2000. We went on holiday in Sicily in November of that year, and it was cold and raining in Paris. And we climbed up Stromboli and slept on the top, which you're not supposed to do. And we ran down the mountain in the morning and swam in the sea, and it was warm. And we got back to Paris a couple of days later and thought, okay, perhaps we should try and design ourselves a life that allows us to live in Sicily. Rossella was still doing her PhD at that point. She was doing a PhD in cell biology. And I was still working in marketing for a firm in Paris. So started thinking about different ideas. The first business plan was based around walking holidays, led by the two of us, taking our first guinea pig trips with some friends and family, and then a few groups of clients, walking around Sicily, walking around the Madonia, the West Coast, the Aeolian Islands, Mount Etna, and so on. Really nice, really beautiful walking trips. Whilst we were doing those, Rossella's friends started asking us if we'd like to try and rent their houses out. So that's where the villa thing came from.
Just thinking back to, you know, your early years, your upbringing, was there anything about your lives that meant that you were always going to be entrepreneurial?
Funny enough, my parents were running a business together, and I grew up thinking I will never ever work with my husband and be an entrepreneur. And I loved doing research and doing something that didn't have to do with cash flow, etc., because I saw what that meant on people's emotions daily. But then there you are. Hugh liked the idea of being an entrepreneur, creating something.
No, I did. My parents were both doctors, but my father did start his own business and took early retirement. He was a surgeon. He took early retirement when he was 55 and started a wood machining business. So that might have been part of it. Although I think actually I have always wanted to start a business, but never really found the courage. So I did my university, I left university, I got a job in Italy, as it happened. I spent 6 years there working as an engineer.
Is that where you met?
No, we met. I was in Bologna, then I moved back. I moved to Paris about 6 years after that, and we met in Paris. I worked as an engineer and then as a marketer, but always for these big companies. But I always had in the back of my mind that I'd really like to do something, but never had the courage or the drive, I suppose. And I guess it was when my brother was killed in an accident in 1998. And that was the thing that I suppose made me think, actually life's too short to be working for the big corporation, doing stuff that I didn't really want to do. That kind of helped me.
I'm so sorry. What a terrible thing. But that was a kind of pivot point, in a sense, for you. Changed your outlook entirely, would you say?
It was. And a lot of things happened at the same time, actually, because 2 weeks before that, I met Rossella. And so we went through that whole thing together, which was quite hard. So, and I think sort of the fact that we made it through that and then decided to get married made us think that, well, maybe we could.
Well, either way, you did it together. I mean, yeah. I wonder whether you would have indulged your entrepreneurial leanings if you hadn't been with Rossella. But we can talk about the partnership maybe a little bit later. I want to talk to you more about your brand. Piper talks about building brand legends, as you know. And at the heart of this is the importance of the brand staying resolutely true to their purpose. What is the Thinking Traveller's purpose?
Our purpose as always spontaneously been to ensure that people have memorable holidays and they come back. So that sense of really creating memories for them. And we do that through opening the doors of incredible places with Sol and offering a really good service on the ground. Ensuring that people would understand the layers of culture and architecture and food and wine. And then he continued like that.
It seems that it was a very kind of organic. It was obvious to you what your purpose was, and that must have been helpful when you were making decisions about how you were going to grow and how you're going to develop and so on, because you had that at the heart of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely, 100%. And we're often told, I think people often notice, that we're just very authentic. And, you know, maybe it doesn't sound very authentic to say that, but...
What does it mean?
Well, I think it means that we're just real to what we've done, because it almost didn't start as a business, strangely. It was almost a sort of a bit of a life decision. You know, of course, we had to make money out of it. We didn't have other money behind us.
There was never any sort of doubt in your mind?
No, I mean, since the beginning, we've never sort of thought, oh, gosh, you know, this isn't going to happen. Let's try and do something else. But I think what I mean by authenticity is that, you know, clearly since the beginning, at a few stages, you know, maybe at the 717, maybe at other times, although actually they pretty much coincide with the 717, perhaps, we've been through processes with people who come from outside and sit us down and talk to us about who we are and try and find our essence and our why and our what. But at the end, what comes out are just different words to describe what we already knew 21 years ago.
When you say the people coming in and talking to us, what are you talking about? Branding experts?
Yes, exactly.
Or business gurus or...
Business
expert.
Gurus, experts, they talk things around. It's really, really reassuring, actually. You know, everybody, the people in our senior leadership team, Piper, our investors, other agencies who come in, they really just get it very quickly because it's there somehow. It doesn't need too much analysing.
I think this is down to the fact that the people we've hired through the years, they come with us because they share the same ethos and the same priorities. And that's been really key. We don't have to convince anybody. We don't have to, you know, oh, this is the culture and this is what you need to do. We hire people that get it.
Yeah.
And if they don't get it, it's so strong that they just don't feel part of it. And ultimately, they wouldn't stay.
Yeah, they're not for you. Your dealings with Piper, you all know that their whole idea about branding is what makes a particular brand better and different to its competitors. Now, the travel industry, incredibly competitive industry, isn't it? What makes the thinking traveller better and different?
I think it's two things. One, in operationally, is our portfolio properties. We have them exclusively, which means they are only available through us.
Which is unusual, isn't it?
Which is absolutely unusual, very, very rare. And that really allows us to invest in the relationship with owners, which are usually very long relationship enduring, where we can really build together and improve together. And on the other side is the way we operate, which is being very thoughtful at every level, and that people really realise it, they see it.
Mm.
It's quite evident with our owners and with the clients.
I was looking at one of your films on your website. You've got it's such a gorgeous website. There's so many beautiful pictures on it. It really makes you want to go away. But your three pillars: exceptional villas, local knowledge, personal service. And you say that's what gets your team up in the morning.
Yeah, and it really does. And they love when clients share feedback, and they really do say a few times, this was the best holiday we had, we want to come back. They sometimes plan the holidays while they're there, and they really trust our team to recommend that next holiday.
And do people come back again and again?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, even when we're growing quickly, as we have been for the last couple of years, about 40% of people travelling with us have travelled with us previously.
Has the business changed in terms of the brand or how you sell it over the years? You know, as you have grown, as you say, the last couple of years, you've grown a lot. Has anything changed during that time in the way you are, the way you run things?
there are different facets to that. There's, you know, clearly operationally things have changed. We're more people now. So when we were five people 18 years ago, now we're about 150 in total. So clearly things have had to change. We've got our leadership team. Our organisation, our marketing has become much more structured, much more sophisticated. Our sales process is structured with a brand new CRM, and all of these kind of things have clearly changed. Also, I suppose from a top leadership perspective, we're now, whereas before we didn't used to spend any time sort of reporting on what had happened in the last month, now we seem to spend quite a lot of time reporting what's happened in the past rather than... But in terms of actually how we sell the experiences, the villa, the dream of the holiday and so on, I think we actually look very similar to how we looked 20 years ago.
But just bigger.
Yeah.
The thing is, we've increased the number of people on the ground proportionally. On the ground, we mean in the destination, so in each island, in Sicily and Puglia. So the level of service that the clients keep getting is the same, if not better. And we've increased the portfolio of experiences that people can experience with us. So the experience that the clients get has improved, if anything.
When you think back over this journey of 21 years as it is now, was there anything that you wish that you had done or invested in earlier? You know, I'm thinking maybe marketing or people or technology.
Yes, certainly. There are always things that one does that make one think, gosh, if I'd done this a couple of years ago, I'd have been a bit further ahead. In hindsight, I would probably have grown things a little bit quicker. Although there's a double-edged sword to that, because you know, part of our success, the secret of our success, I suppose, is that we've always had everything very much under control from a product and service perspective. So there's always a balance there between growth and quality control, if you like. Mm-hmm. I think certain hires we could have made earlier.
For example?
For example, we've been talking for a long time about getting a managing director in to take over some of Rossella and my sort of key tasks. These discussions go back probably to 2015, 2016, something like that.
And why did you think you needed to get a managing director in? Was it that you were overwhelmed by...
I think we just had so much going on that perhaps we weren't that expert at doing. In terms of things like managing a growing team, putting in processes, managing some of the operational challenges, because we're a very vertically integrated business. There are a lot of operational challenges, a lot of people on the ground, a lot of sort of quality and governance things to think about that we weren't really expert in or perhaps even that interested in ourselves. And I think getting a managing director in a few years ago would have allowed us to start working on rather than in, which is a key thing. I think we still, even today, are working very much in the business, although that's going to change.
Is it? Okay. So we have a step change here because Piper invested in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
How challenging was it for you to find the right investor?
So we were contacted by several people, and I think 2018 we met Piper, and we had quite a few discussions with them. We've probably met four or five times between then and 2020. Out of all of the people who we spoke to, they were the only people that we seriously considered. They were just clearly different.
From, in what way? Why? What
just more personal. They were real people rather than just financial people somehow.
Yeah, I think it was really reassuring for me because I wasn't convinced at all about all of these idea of fastest growth and having an investor in. But because Piper really genuinely interested in growing the brand and helping you, and they really get, and actually, if anything, they've been supporting us in getting better customer servicing and getting there in front of it, really strengthening the brand and understanding what our clients want. I was really impressed when they asked us during due diligence to do a survey, for example, with our owners and our clients, because they wanted to see what clients and owners thought of us and how we could improve. And I thought that was really amazing. So it's not just the figures that would have scared me to death, but it's how we can really grow the brand and get better, and even in terms of growing the team.
Yeah.
And then you said, of course, the thing that changed was COVID. So talk me through that process then. What?
Yes. So at the beginning of 2019, rather than hiring a managing director or a CEO, we hired a director of sales and marketing. So that was our first, should we say, step up hire, really big hire. And we were running very nicely through 2019 into 2020. We opened an office in New York, sales office, to grow our American client base, which is already very big, but we wanted to get closer to them, to have local people on East Coast time was fantastic for us. That was really pulling through. So everything was looking very nice going into the beginning of 2020. And then this totally unexpected COVID thing that we started noticing in January. By the end of February, beginning of March, it was clear that it was going to have a massive effect. Everything closed down. Our New York office turned from a really fantastic sales office into an uncontrolled refund center. And we looked at our cash flows and we figured out that if we paid back all our clients, as people were starting to demand, and laid off all our staff, we probably had about a month's worth of cash. So 20 years of work or 18 years of work, whatever it was at that point, we basically had to make a decision within a couple of weeks of what to do, whether to fight it or whether just to go into hibernation. This is pre-furlough, any of those things that then came out. So I thought the best way to fight this is, first of all, to try and hang on to our cash. So try to persuade our clients that they'd be better to let us keep their deposits and
stick with us.
We'll issue some vouchers, and when they can travel, we'll make sure that they have the usual fantastic experience. Thankfully, at the end of the day, about 85% of our clients agreed to allow us to do that. Wow. which was fantastic and saved us. On the other hand, I thought, you know, even if we can get through this, who knows what else is around the corner, and anyway, it's time for the business to have broader shoulders. So I went out and I spoke to a lot of people, all those people that have been contacting us for the previous 2 or 3 years. And of all of those people, the only people who wanted to have a serious conversation at that time were actually the only people that I really wanted to have a serious conversation with, which was Piper. And so we went through that year from March and in November 20th, which was actually the anniversary of my brother's death, they invested. We secured that deal.
Wow. And that was a life raft, I guess, is what you're saying. I mean, did it feel like that at the time?
Yes. Well, by November the 20th, I was absolutely exhausted, so I had no idea what I was feeling. But the... In the end, we could have got through without it, and we figured out by probably April, May of that year that we could get through without it. But we decided that we wanted to do it and that this was a good time.
You must have had some pretty dark days, though, during that period. I mean, the world stopped, didn't it? There were no flights. No one was going anywhere. No one was doing anything. How did you deal with that? It's almost like an existential crisis, wasn't it?
The team was amazing. It really was amazing. Not just the senior leadership team. We were really united. We were all working from home, having, luckily, you know, Zoom was invented by then, so we could all work from home. And we were used to, because people in our destination had been working from home anyway, so it wasn't a big change. And I think the fact that we pulled together and we kept talking and sharing stuff, the marketing was fantastic, because we really managed to find the right tone of voice to keep talking to clients about recipes, about wine, about, you know, how things were doing in the destination, without having, obviously we couldn't say, hey, do you want to go to this wonderful villa, because nobody could travel. But we kept people engaged, and the response from clients were amazing. I think we have a few saved, really thanking us and wishing us well, and the people in the destination well, because obviously Italy was the first country who was hit badly.
Yes.
And we had some amazing letters from American clients, who obviously I'm much more, you know, extrovert, wishing as well. So in the tragedy of it, it was actually really good to assess how strong our community was. And the other really good thing was that the owners really trusted us in our strategy of how to, you know, go through this difficult period. And we were all in it together and we made it.
You made it. What about your community then? Who are your customers? Who is there a typical Thinking Traveller client?
There are many typical Thinking Traveller clients. They're international, really from all over the world. And that was the case since the beginning because, as he was saying, when we started, we were living in Paris. We've always been quite international in terms of our friendships and connections. We had more Italian clients than European clients during COVID when people started to travel again. Different ages, because our properties range from the small, cute, little one-bedroom on the beach, just for the two of you for a romantic holiday and honeymoon or proposals, and we had a few.
Oh, did you?
Yes, where we organised the whole thing to the almost private boutique hotel, but it's a house that, where you have the exclusivity of an amazing place with service and chef and your tennis court and your spa, but for the 20 or 24 of you. Which works fantastically well for a lot of what we call multi-generational, lots of groups where the grandparents want to celebrate the silver anniversary or the birthday, and they gather all the family from all over the world. So there's there's a lot of families, you know, couples with kids or two couples with kids and grandparents. So there's a bit of everything.
Yeah, they're a diverse lot, absolutely. And I think the international nature of our client base is really important and quite unusual for travel companies, strangely, because most British travel business focus on the British market. Even some of the really big names in luxury tour operators, you'd be really surprised just how few international clients they have. Whereas something about us, because we've never really considered ourselves a British company, strangely, but maybe because we both lived outside the UK for such a long time, maybe because the first 10 years of the company, Rossella and I were actually in Palermo, and perhaps also because we were born with the internet. So the website went live in 2002, which was pretty much when Google AdWords started. And so immediately I was expecting us to be able to just sort of sit down and everything would happen.
How did that go?
But suddenly nobody contacted us. So so I noticed this little thing on the top right saying, you know, put your ad here, and got my credit card out. And suddenly people started coming in from all over the world. And it was young for it was early days for Google AdWords, I think. So there was, you know, virtually no competition. And we figured out then that actually, you know, a certain type of client would come from the US. So lots of Sicilian Americans, of course. We quickly sort of tapped into that through Google AdWords as a core client base, particularly for the larger houses, but not only.
And how have you grown that community during that time? Do you advertise?
So, we've obviously done a lot of advertising, mainly digital. And that's changed over the years. So it started out with AdWords, and then we moved into paid social and other things. I suppose the other real key is PR for us. And again, that was something that we identified quite early on, and we spent, you know, proportionally a lot of money on that from very early days. So we now have PR agencies in North America, in the UK, in four countries in Europe, and in Australia. And we work very hard with them. Rossella and I travel to do interviews. We host press trips. And that's been really key to growing the brand from the beginning.
You call yourselves, you know, evidently very international. Is there a difference in the way clients respond to you depending where they come from?
Yes.
And what they want.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, absolutely. American clients want everything organized beforehand. So by April, very often, we have an itinerary where every day is planned with restaurants and guides and excursions and even the hairdresser and the masseurs. Whilst very often, British clients would not be too keen in organizing lots of activities.
Not
before
too many hairdressers for
they
the British.
Arrive, but then they want the activities organized more last minute. So it's that's a different trend.
Just for out of curiosity, what's the most extraordinary thing you've ever been asked to organize?
That piano was quite something.
A grand piano in the garden for a wedding, and soprano singing La Norma for somebody who's like third generation Americans. Lots of small things. I struggle to find one super extraordinary. There is stuff, interestingly enough, that our honours are spontaneously done. I remember once we had, we do have quite a few kind of celebrities and VIP in the villas, and obviously because it's not a hotel, they want the privacy, so we can't really say. But at some point, an honour was very, felt very privileged and honoured to have as a guest somebody quite important. And they asked me what the favourite colour was, and I said white. And he went out and asked the gardener to plant white flowers everywhere the garden so that the lady could arrive and had her favourite. So that kind of stuff.
You're listening to the Piper podcast, How I Grew My Brand. Today, I'm with Rosella and Hugh Bogier, founders of the luxury villa brand, The Thinking Traveller.
What about working together as a husband and wife team? And Rosella, you said, starting to laugh now, you said you looked at your own parents, you thought, I am never doing that. And here we are, you're doing that 21 years in. How do you work together as a married couple?
Well, it's hard to imagine it any other way now. Obviously, it hasn't always been easy. There are times when I'm sure each of us think, well, you know, what would life be like if we were each doing our own thing and coming back home in the evening and sort of comparing notes or talking about something completely different. It is and has been absolutely sort of all encompassing for 21 years.
I think we're quite complementary.
Who does what then? How do you divide things up?
So Hugh is more business side and development and tech and all the kind of forward planning and more risk taking, and a more detailed controlling team, brand, imagery, people's relations, I would say. But I guess the difficulty hasn't been so much working together, is how are you together when you're not work? So not working. So you go on holiday, how do you actually switch off and not think and talk about work? Or if you go out on some Valentine's Day, for example, how can you manage not to talk about work? Because that's what we do 24 hours a day together.
Yeah, and today is Valentine's Day, by coincidence.
And we're not going out.
You know.
No, we were talking about that earlier. It's not so, worth it. We'll go out tomorrow.
Okay, so you say, so how do we and how do you and how? Well, how? How do you not talk about it the whole time? How do you make room for a marriage within the business?
I suppose we've got the other huge side of our life is the kids. So we spend a lot of time talking about that. So,
you've got three kids together,
true,
yeah?
It's true that, and we started sort of more or less the same time. So 2002, we started the business. 2003, our first child was born. So, the whole thing has absolutely grown up together. And you mentioned holidays earlier on. The fact, of course, that we are in the travel business means that, for years, every holiday pretty much was connected with the business. So, particularly summer holidays. Every half term, every Easter, every summer holiday was somehow connected with going out and looking at properties or staying in a villa or...
That's worse in life,
this,
right?
Yes. And the other.
But I mean, it sounds very enviable in lots of ways.
Yeah.
And, anyone listening to this would think, oh, lucky them, they're always... But actually, and you say it wasn't a holiday, Rosella. That's what I heard you muttering that. It's not a holiday. If it's work, it's not a holiday, is it?
We do struggle to switch off realities. We have managed to do some really amazing trips outside our destinations, and this is when we can really disconnect completely, almost, because you don't then go to a hotel room and you have an idea and you think, oh, you photograph it, that would be really nice to have in our villa. So never completely switch off, but I guess that's normal. But it has been a very good adventure, and we do genuinely love the destination where we operate, so it's not too bad to be there. Even if it's not a complete holiday, it's been for 20 years. We just got used to it.
It's just your life. How do you make decisions? do you, I mean, you say you complement each other, but presumably you make decisions together rather than dividing the areas and doing your own thing. So how do you do that?
We discuss them a lot. And the big decisions, what are the big decisions? Big decision, I suppose, from a strategic level, whether to go into a new territory or whether to take on a particularly challenging villa, whether to hire one person or another person. So we talk about things a lot. And
do you disagree?
We do sometimes disagree. And on big decisions, if we disagree on it, then we generally don't do it. You know, if it's, for example, opening up a new region, there are a few occasions where we visited somewhere and we disagreed on whether it's something that we want to do or not, and we decided not to do it.
And why would you decide not to do a region, for example? What?
For us to open into a new territory, quite a lot of things have to coincide. So we've got to have great properties. We've got to have access to great people, and we've got to sort of fall in love with that place.
And do you look at other areas and think, "Oh, I would like to go there. I would like to go there."
Yes, certainly. I think for the moment, actually, we've naturally focused now on southern Italy and Greece. You know, plus Corsica, but Corsica has a lot in common with southern Italy in many ways. So I think the logical thing for us to do now, the thing that we'd really like to do, is move more into other areas of Italy. And I think there's some, obviously some key opportunities there for us, because we're well known for Italy. Half our team speaks Italian. We've got lots of Italians in the team, and our clients clearly love Italy.
Yeah,
and we are continuing to grow in Greece.
Yeah,
which is amazing. And each island has got something different and unique in a way. So Greece is not all the same bucket. So it's nice to be able to recommend clients different islands, different archipelagos, depending on what they like to do, whether they want to party, whether they want to have more a spiritual thing. And so we're definitely on the right track to do that.
We haven't really talked about White Key, did we, about that acquisition?
Tell me about White Key, which is the Greek operation that you took over, yeah?
We worked through 2021 to acquire, merge with them, and launch a portfolio of villas in the Aegean and the Peloponnese, where we weren't previously present. So with that acquisition, really, we cover the whole of Greece, and we are the biggest exclusive operator of villas in Greece.
And how has that merger worked out? What have been the challenges of merging two operations like that?
We were very lucky because we found out that we had a very similar culture. So we were a bit ahead in terms of more defined processes and, you know, guidelines and stuff being written and organized. Whereas there were maybe where we were a few years before, but the same sense of really wanting to exceed clients' expectations, the same internal team culture. It was fantastic because we did do a team meeting at the end of 2021, was it? Which ended up being a terrible super spreader event. But the Greek team came, the Italian came, and it was fantastic. You wouldn't say who belonged to which company after like 2 hours of being together. They just blended together. And then obviously having two offices and two slightly different way of working had to be put together with more consistency, but we managed to have a really good first summer.
Well, we got a project manager in to look at the challenges of the actual integration, just to break it down into chunks and follow it through, and that was really helpful at the beginning, just to put us on the right track, because clearly there are lots of challenges. We were working on two different business models. They were completely non-exclusive. We were completely exclusive. So we had to shift over part of their portfolio to working exclusively. That's the first thing, and that's still ongoing. Another thing, of course, is CRM. They were working on a totally different system. So bringing them into our system, their accounting systems, all of the sort of the business governance stuff had to be brought together, and then just things like employees. So all our people and culture systems, although, as Rossella said, our cultures are incredibly similar in many, many ways. You know, both very sort of Mediterranean. And
even in London.
Spontaneous, even in London, yeah. Sort of.
I want to talk to you now about sustainability. How do you think about sustainability at the Thinking Traveller?
It's always been very dear to us since we started, and our business model, if you like, in investing locally and really ensuring that people on the ground could get more jobs and be exposed to a more international client and helping the local economies has been really, really important. We are now working quite well with the Conservation Collective, and recently Hugh and I have been invited to be part of the steering committee of the Sicily Environment Fund, which we created last year, and we really hope will make a difference in Sicily in helping with several projects. But mostly, we were really delighted when Piper advised us or recommended us to try to get B Corp certified. So we just sent our applications, and there's a lot of work to do in terms of policies, but we are adamant that it's going to bring us in the right paths to really become a B Corp certified business.
And do all that. But I mean, it was difficult though, isn't it? Because now there's questions about flying and travelling and, you know, carbon emissions and so on. How do you square that circle?
There's definitely a tension there. Flying, carbon emissions, as you say. And there's also the fact that many of our clients, once they arrive on holiday, they may have the best intentions, but they do like to use their air conditioning. They do like to splash around in the swimming pool.
Speedboats and all sorts,
and they like a speedboat, and they like a green lawn, and all of those things which are inherently unsustainable in the Mediterranean, unless the villas can be made properly carbon neutral with solar panels and so on. So we're working on those things with owners so that we can continue to provide the same experiences but make them a little bit more sustainable.
Because there are very real challenges, aren't there, that you would not have even considered back when you started in the early 2000s, droughts in some of these Mediterranean areas, challenges that we're suddenly having to face.
Well, I think we were actually quite aware of all these even 20 years ago. In fact, if you look at our first brochure from 2003, there is a page about sustainability and about how we view our kind of travel as inherently sustainable, more so than a big hotel or a cruise ship, sustainable both ecologically and economically, I suppose, because we're using local people to rebuild old houses and regenerate wealth in areas and repopulate in many cases villages and areas of Mediterranean islands that were being abandoned.
There's a lot in the new vague of properties that we've been taking on recently is really the importance of using local materials, the local stones, getting the older people from the villages to pass their skills to the new ones so they can actually create jobs on the ground there, and really lots of upcycling being done. So rather than buying the new sink and the new, I don't know what, tables, really going around and get old stuff and upcycle them in a nice way.
Mm. What do you put your success down to?
I think determination, certainly, all the way through. It hasn't always been easy. A bit of luck in the sense that what we wanted to achieve for our own lifestyle back in 2002 actually coincided with what our clients wanted, and therefore made a viable business proposition. And there was luck in that, because not every business can say it started in that way, I suppose.
Timing?
Absolutely. I think it was the right time. When we started in Sicily, the concept of luxury villas was really non-existent there. And then when we decided to move to Puglia, it was exactly the right time when there were a couple of hotels owners who had also invested in opening five-star hotels with golf courses and stuff. So Puglia was kind of starting at the same time. And I think with our PR, we did speed that process up quite a lot, because we've invested quite a lot in trying to get really good article on the cultural side and the amazing natural beauty of the regions we work on. It wasn't just about our villa, so obviously that brought more tourists there.
Mm. And another number seven, you have won for the last 7 years Condé Nast Traveller's World's Best Villa Rental Company.
Which is amazing if you think that we, when we started, we had probably 100 villas, and now we still have, last September, we had less than 300. And we are competing with villa operators that have thousands.
When we started what? We had 100 villas.
When we won for the first time.
When we won for the first time.
We've always been much smaller.
2011.
Or smaller than yeah. most competitors.
But maybe that's the secret to it, the fact that it is smaller.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, actually, because people often ask us, so who are your competition? And it's strangely not that easy a question to answer because there are so many different types of businesses that offer that operate in our sector. Probably the most known ones now are really just platforms. They're tech platforms that bring together either individual villa owners or other businesses that list their properties on that platform. And when you then book with that brand, you're effectively just entering into a transaction which puts you in touch with somebody else.
Would you go out and find a villa with a particular client in mind?
What we do very often is we work with owners in restoring an old casale or an old castle, an old masseria, having our clients' expectations in mind. So some owners come to us saying, I'd like to invest in this place, or I got this piece of land, or I got this derelict castle that my grandfather left to me. I'd like to work with you. Could you help us putting it together so it can really work well? And that's what we do. We sit with the floor plans and work it from there.
It's about really understanding clients. So it's about anticipating their needs. It's about asking the right questions, because if an experience is a disappointment for somebody, that's usually because they haven't gone to the place that's right for them. And that's part of our responsibility. So we're not just a platform where somebody goes on and says, OK, I'm going to pick this villa. You can book online with our platform, which is unusual, actually, because with most villa rental websites, they then have to check availability with the owners and so on. Because we have control of all of that, you can actually book online on our website. However, the first thing that will happen after you've received your confirmation invoice and so on is that you'll get a call from us just to make sure that you actually book the right property. And if it's not right, we'll recommend something else.
Do you think, either of you, that you would have built a business on your own, as in without each other? Could you have done something similar alone?
I wouldn't. I would have stayed working with my sales and maybe discovering something interesting, but no.
Well, I actually started it on my own. Yeah. So when I started the business, I didn't know that Rossella was going to join me, and she had told me that she was never going to join me. And then about 6 months later, she had joined me. So it's quite a long time ago. However, I think it's, without Rossella, it's very unlikely that it would have been successful.
There you are. That's because it's Valentine's Day, right?
Are you worriers?
Yeah, I think we both worry. Yeah.
About different things in different stages. So we compensate each other again. But yeah, I guess.
Do you sleep well?
Rossella sleeps pretty well. I quite often wake up too early in the morning and thinking about things. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any such thing as enough in business terms for you? Are you pushing, pushing, pushing? Or do you ever think to yourself, this is pretty good, we'll leave it here?
Well, we're in an interesting phase now, of course, because we just hired a CEO at the end of last year. And so, you know, we're getting ready, if you like, to leave some of that day-to-day, most of that day-to-day involvement in the business to the CEO. So we'll be focusing on the things that can really add value. So the relationships with the press, relationships with some owners, driving forwards perhaps some new regions, and, you know, helping to grow the business that way. So I think probably the answer to that question might come in the next few months about whether we think enough's enough, and we'll just, you know, leave that to the engine, the momentum that the business has acquired and will acquire independent of us, or whether we want to continue personally driving it forwards.
I'm wondering how easy you'll find it to let go of that day-to-day control? Do you think you'll be an interfering founder?
I think we've been very lucky in finding this person, Laika, who's amazing. And I can't believe we've been so lucky. So I would have thought I would have found it really difficult to let go. But I have this sense that she's going to be better than me on the day to day. So it's a case of working together and, you know, trusting her. I think it's going to be easier than I thought it would have been.
And again, looking forward, where are you going? What do you want to build?
I think the thinking traveller has quite a unique space in the market as really the only exclusive, 100% exclusive high-end villa company. Because of that, I think it is geographically unlimited. So really the opportunity for whoever's driving this business in the future, whether it's helped or not by us, is to expand geographically, identify places where we can combine our unique mixture of exclusivity and local knowledge and personal service and provide something in that area where that our clients really want.
Tomorrow the world
maybe.
Going slowly though, so that we can keep it under control,
or at least another part of the Mediterranean.
Rossella and Hugh Bogier, thank you very much.
Thank you
so much, Mary. It's been a pleasure.